developing and mentoring our team, creating processes, marketing, managing the risks of the business. So then I really felt like a business owner rather than an expert accountant.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. In today's episode, episode number 45, we're having a conversation with Merrill Johnson. Merrill is the CEO and founder of Bean Ninjas, which is a cloud-based bookkeeping company. They're doing some amazing things. And so, of course, we're going to have a bit of a conversation about bookkeeping. But what's really, really interesting is the story of how Merrill has built her business. She's had meteoric growth. She's done some amazing things in a very short space of time, captured the attention of very astute business people in the process. And what she's going to be talking about in this interview is how she started her business, how she transitioned from self-employment to true business ownership, some of the mistakes that she made along the way, some of the lessons she's learned, some of the good bits of advice she's had, and of course, some of the poor bits of advice that she's had as well. And what she's going to be sharing is how she moved from being the lady, in this case, who was providing great care to her client base, to being a true business owner who builds teams, develops systems so that the team can then develop great experiences for the client base rather than her, and how she's had to transition, you know, from one business model to another. It's a really fantastic interview, and she's very generous in her time. Of course, we do have a conversation at the end about bookkeeping and how to get the most from bookkeepers, and you know, things that you really need to keep an eye on to make sure that your practice is, you know, meeting its financial compliance obligations, but equally how you can make better financial decisions based on numbers, because we all know that better optics equal better decisions equals better outcomes. So I hope you really enjoy this interview with Merrill. Please, as always, have a pen and paper handy. There's lots of gold in this interview, and I'm sure that you'll want to capture that and take it into your practice. So without any further ado, here's Merrill Johnson. Merrill Johnson, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's fantastic to have you here. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to be with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
You're really welcome. Merrill, for the audience, just a bit of a bio, and obviously we cover this in the intro, but you're the co-founder of Bean Ninjas, which is a bookkeeping business, which is productize a service, which I'm really curious to talk to you about a couple of things today. What I'm really interested to know is a little bit about your business journey. And then, of course, I want to talk about bookkeeping because, you know, we are a business show for dentists. But obviously, there's some financial stuff to talk about. But your business story is so interesting that I can't let it go unremarked upon. But given you've got a business that's only a couple of years old, you've already got offices in Australia, the UK, and America, I'm curious, how did your business come about? What's the backstory?
Sure. So my background was as an accountant. So I started my career working in Melbourne at one of the big accounting firms, BDO, and then spent some time working in commerce as a financial accountant within some big companies, and decided that I wanted to go out on my own back in 2013 to have a bit more flexibility and also focus on the work that I wanted to do. And so originally that business was called MCJ Consulting, and that was doing project accounting work, and it was doing a whole variety of different things. So basically a client would come to me or would be recommended by a friend, and then I'd scope out what they needed and then come up with a proposal and then execute on that work. So I was doing a whole variety of different accounting tasks and projects. And while that was quite enjoyable to start with, and then I gradually built a team. And because of the variety of the different work we were doing, it was very difficult to build a team with the right skill set because each project needed a different kind of skill. So after a couple of years of that, I realized that it was difficult to scale that business model, and that's where Bean Ninjas came about. So I cut about 90% of those different project type services and decided just to focus on bookkeeping, and then packaged bookkeeping up in a way that we just had three different pricing tiers with a very defined service offering, and then marketed that to a niche market. So that meant that we were able to build a team and processes to deliver those three packages packages very well. But if someone, a client, potential client, was looking for a service that was outside of that, then instead of changing our internal processes and trying to do something new, we would just help them find another bookkeeper who could meet those needs. And by staying very narrow, that was what helped us to grow so quickly.
Yeah, because your growth has been really meteoric, and this is one of the things I'm really keen to explore, because you know, you've been all over the internet as a business success story, and I've seen your interviews and listened to your podcast interviews as well, and you know, there's nothing short of remarkable. So firstly, congratulations on such a meteoric rise. What I'm really curious just to explore is, because with dentists, we often talk about, self-employment and business ownership, and many people kind of use the words interchangeably, but they're not. And my understanding from that first business that you had there, the consulting business, was it sounds as though you built yourself a job. Is that correct?
Exactly. So I was an expert in my field of accounting, which was cloud accounting systems, and so I built myself a job. So when someone came to MCJ Consulting, they wanted to work with me, and it was my expertise that they needed. So I was tied to that business, whereas what I wanted was to build a business that didn't need me to do the service delivery. So, and that's why I went down the bookkeeping path, where it was easier to create a product and train other people to do the service delivery, and then I could focus on building a business and being a leader. So developing and mentoring our team, creating processes, marketing, managing the risks of the business. So then I really felt like, when I do now, feel like a business owner rather than an expert accountant.
Yeah, so that's a really key distinction, is it? Because there'll be a lot of people in, I guess, all sorts of professional services firms, dentistry, obviously, first and foremost here today, who are fantastic dentists, fantastic experts in their field, but many of them won't be running a business. They'll be creating a job for themselves. So as you transitioned from, I suppose, self-employment to true business ownership, what do you think, some of the hurdles were there? Where did you kind of have to shift gear a little bit? And were there any particular challenges that you personally had to overcome?
Absolutely. So building a team means that we required a lot more documentation about how to deliver a service than if I was just to deliver it myself. So initially, it was more expensive to deliver the work by me paying someone else to do it, training them how to do it, and delivering, setting up a process for them to follow. So that needed to be a gradual transition, or I needed to invest a lot of capital up front to build that system, because it was more expensive to have someone else delivering that than it was for me to do that. And I think that is why the first 6 months of growth were fairly slow, because I spent a lot of that time, and with my business partner at the time, building all of those systems and gradually training a team. So I think the choice there is to either take a cut to your income initially, or to invest some money up front to build those processes and systems and train other staff.
Yeah. And I guess there's always a temptation as well for business owners making that transition as well. There's a fear that, the work won't be done as well as I can do it as well. So I understand you've got your systems and your processes, but just, were there ever moments, did you ever have that, I could just do this faster myself? If you could just get out of my way, I'll do it myself.
Absolutely. And I think it's a trap to fall into, because it definitely is easier and faster to do it yourself than to train someone initially. It's only over the medium term that you start to see the benefit of training someone else. And they may not be able to do it to the standard that you require. But if you have some reviews or some other checks in place to capture any high-risk errors, so in accounting, we don't want to make any mistakes on something like a BAS, then that's a risk for our business. So, and maybe a bookkeeper who's not as experienced might make an error, so then we would put in a control that someone else would check that work to mitigate that risk. So, yes, it's likely that some junior staff won't be able to do the work to the level that you would expect it, but there's other things you can do to help with that rather than you doing it yourself.
So as you came to Be Ninjas, moving away from MCJ Consulting, obviously you started with the intention of scaling Be Ninjas from the outset, right? That was always the plan, to scale.
It was. So from day one, we knew the business model that we wanted to follow, And so from the very beginning, our goal was to systemize everything and to train other people. So having that mindset from the start meant that we made different decisions than we would have if we were trying to maximize cash flow and profit from day one.
Yeah, that's a really critical point, because what I find that the tendency for most people to do when they get into business is to start working like a crazy man or crazy woman, and they get so busy doing the stuff that the time that they would normally or should take to perhaps develop the team, write the systems, get the processes in place is sucked up just by delivering services to clients or patients in our case. So it's a really common error. One of the things that I'm really curious to understand is, because you've got teams in multiple locations, right? And obviously as you've started your business, you know, the key differentiator that I'm hearing is that as you transition from one business to other, you change from being the lady who provided great care and service to your clients personally to being the business owner who developed teams and processes, which in turn delivered great care and service to your clients. But as you've built those teams in different locations, how have you managed to, you know, run multiple teams across a variety of locations? What have been the challenges there, and what did you have to do to overcome some of those hurdles?
So when we initially started the business, we were just planning to work in Australia. So it wasn't our intention to actually go overseas. But where the group of clients that we work with, a lot of them happen to be location independent, which means they run a business where they can work from overseas. And so they happen to have colleagues that did work in the US and the UK. And eventually we had so many referrals that we realized that it actually made sense to start in these other countries. But a decision that we had made at the beginning was that our business also was going to work remotely. So we do have little hubs. So I live on the Gold Coast, and we happen to have some bookkeepers based on the Gold Coast, and we work together sometimes, or we work from co-working spaces. But all of our back-end systems are cloud-based, which means that the team can work from anywhere at any time. And so that meant that when we did introduce staff overseas, all of our systems already were set up to work remotely. So we didn't really need to make any further changes apart from knowledge of particular tax requirements in different countries.
And so bringing the team in alignment with it, you know, the vision of being ninjas and getting that culture right, was there anything particularly around that you had to work through, or was it just kind of let people go with the systems and really run hard with it?
So that's one of the challenges of a remote team, is that we're not all in the one office. So we don't have those chats in the kitchen or drinks after work. So that's something that we've really worked hard on, is to have team chat. And we have a fitness challenge where everyone can post their progress on that and submit, you know, everyone shares photographs of their dogs and their kids. And so we're really trying to build a collaborative team environment, which is more difficult, which we're aware of when it's remote. And then I actually spend a lot of time talking with staff, so having weekly check-in calls with them when they're new, fortnightly check-ins as they get more experienced, and then also creating other leaders within the business who are then communicating with their team, checking in to see that they have enough work, that they're being challenged, if they have a particular type of work that they enjoy, are we playing to their strengths and giving them that kind of work? So we try and have a lot of open communication, and the team know that I'm always available too. If they do want to have a chat, that their first point is their team manager rather than me, but it's a very open door. I suppose I can say open door, even though we are remote.
Open mic.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. So what I really love about that, Meryl, is there's a couple of really solid pieces of advice in there. And I think it comes back to having that team structure really, you know, nicely defined as well. You've got your team leaders in place. You've got people in roles that are playing to their natural strengths and abilities. So you're able to get the best out of your team, you know, from the get-go. And, you know, I guess, you know, even though there's the open door policy, you know, if you've got that, I hate to use the word chain of command because I don't want it to sound like a dictatorship or a military environment, but you do have a process for people to be able to, you know, seek help or get advice or input as required. So I think that's really good. And the thing I'm guessing around that is that must free up your time to then focus on the things that you do best as well.
It does. So we're actually going through an interesting change in the business. We have been the last couple of months. So previously I had a business partner and he ran the operational side and I ran marketing, business development, and relationships. So I've actually recently bought him out of the business. So I'm doing both roles at the moment. So my time isn't feeling as freed up as it used to. But my goal was prior to buying my business partner out was to be working less than 20 hours a week running the business. And I never quite got to 20 hours. I got down to about 35 hours a week, which when we first started, it was more like 60. And over time, with all of the systems we were building, I could see that that was the right trend. So I am working hard at the moment again, just to work with the team and improve our systems again. But my goal again is to have the right structure and the right people so that I can step out and work less and less hours and be overseeing and coming up with the vision and leading the team rather than the day-to-day operations.
Which is the true role of a business owner, right? That's ultimately what business owners do as opposed to the self-employed person.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the leader isn't doing, I don't see, doing the day-to-day work. They're just guiding others and mentoring them to deliver a great experience.
Yeah, fantastic. So one of the things I'm really curious to understand is because, you know, dentistry, accounting, there's some commonalities there. Obviously, you know, service-based professions, you know, high attention to detail, lots of precision involved. What do you think has been the worst piece of advice, you at career counseling, worst piece of advice that you've ever been given when it came to either running a business or you know, trying to get things going for you? What do you think has kind of been something that might have go, oh, that was terrible advice?
So usually people ask for the best piece of advice, the worst. So that's interesting. So my father he ran his own business back when I was growing up, I was around that. And he always said to me, never have a business partner. And for me, when I had a business partner with Bee Ninjas, it was working together with someone that actually helped us to really grow the business. So Bee Ninjas wouldn't be where it is if I hadn't have had a business partner that was as invested as I was. So ultimately, it turned out that we had different goals. And so he actually still works in the business, but we weren't able to make that work. And we probably should have had one CEO rather than both of us making a lot of big decisions. So I'd say that was a bad piece of advice from my dad, because if you can find the right business partner, then I think that who's really invested in the business and has a different skill set to you, that was probably the other mistake that I made. Both my business partner was an accountant as well, so we had very similar skills. And in hindsight, or if I was to partner with someone else in the future, I would find someone who complemented my skill set. So I'd say that was not everyone is suited to having a business partner either, but to say flat out that it's a bad idea, I think was a bad piece of advice.
Okay, cool. And what about the best advice you've been given? You know, what's something that you thought, wow, that was with the benefit of hindsight, that piece of advice was just pure gold?
Get better at saying no. So there's only so much time in the day. So if you say yes to everything, then you're not really focusing on it might only be a couple, two or three key things that are going to drive the success of your business. So I think it's really important to identify what those drivers are and focus on those. And if an opportunity comes up that doesn't relate to achieving those couple of goals, then I think it's really important to get better at saying no. So I think it was Warren Buffett that said, write down 25 goals. And then the idea is not to do all of those. I think with him, he was saying you just need to pick one. And then do everything that's related to achieving that goal rather than trying to do too many things.
I think that's really good advice. And one of the things that we talk about, and I really love the fact that you've used the word drivers, because I use the word critical drivers as well, because my experience, similar to yours, is there's a handful of things that make the business really rock along and the rest of it is detail. And so I think if for dentists listening, if you can identify the two or three or four or five or however many it is, but probably no more than five things that really make the biggest difference in your practice then, and focus your energy on that, then that's going to move the needle or move the dial much more quickly, much more effectively than trying to be doing a bazillion things and, you know, kind of doing all those things, you know, kind of half well or not well as well. So I think that's really good advice. So good advice and bad advice there. Partnerships can work. That's cool. And then focus on the things that make the biggest difference. So I'm curious as well, before we get into the bookkeeping stuff, because I know we're going to discuss numbers in a second, and I am a self-confessed Excel nerd. I do love a good pivot table. I don't really have much of a life, and it's amazing that I somehow managed to get married. But I do wanted to talk to you quickly. I'm a bit of a book nerd as well, and I love a good business book. Do you have a favorite book or a book that's kind of impacted you more than any other?
So I love reading, and I read a lot of business books, and I'm always trying to learn something new. If I had to say the business book that's had the biggest impact, that would be, and this is a book that I read a long time ago, and it was The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And that was what changed my mindset and inspired me to originally start my first business. And then also I kept coming back to it to think about trying to work less hours and have a life outside of work, and to do that, building the right systems to achieve that goal.
Yeah, it's a fabulous read. I really like Tim Ferriss's work. I don't know if you've read his new one, Tools of the Titans. It's a fairly good read as well. So sounds like book club here at Savvy Dentist Podcast, doesn't it?
Does. I haven't actually read that one. And probably there's one, I will say two others. So there's another book called Traction, which is, and that's more about building, so leading a business and leading other leaders within your business. So I think that's more of a higher level business book, and that's been more useful for me now that I have managers in my team. And if I had to say one other, I know I'm talking a lot about books, but I think they're fantastic. Last one would be The 7-Day Startup by Dan Norris. And the main learning for me from that was about testing something and moving quickly and learning from customers. So if in our business, if we wanted to try something, we would launch it with a customer, get their feedback, and then quickly adapt, whether that's a different product line, a way of doing something. I think the best feedback that you can get is from customers, and then move quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. Yeah, what's the old saying? The sharpen your axe on the whetstone of the market. And I think that's really good advice. Dan's work is wonderful. I like that. And I also did hear in another interview, you started your own business in 7 days. Is that right? You went from, to launch in 7 days. Is that correct?
We did. So after reading Dan's book, he had a methodology of launching a business in 7 days with the idea of getting a paying customer within 7 days and then learning and adapting. And so that's what we did. So it's amazing when you set yourself short time frames, what you can do. So our business was launched with a logo that we designed ourselves. We built the website in less than a day. And then we started talking with customers in that first week. So I mean, we did get all of our legal side sorted out first. So the company registration, the co-founder agreement, all of that takes a bit longer, but the actual launch of the product was in less than a week. And then we've continued to move quickly and adapt. So our very first, what we do now is quite different to our very first three pricing packages.
Yeah. And of course you need those early experiences from which you can iterate. So no business I know ever kind of starts out as the final product. So you've got to be able to adapt and change quickly and move with it. And let's face it, times are changing quickly. So the faster you can adapt to the, environment, the more success you're going to have, and the more likely you are to succeed. So wonderful piece of advice. Meryl, I want to move on to bookkeeping because I know this is really at the core of what you do. And we had a bit of a conversation prior to, the recording about bookkeeping, some of the challenges and so on. But when it comes to, small businesses and dentists in particular, because I know you work with some dentists, what do you see as some of the challenges or mistakes being made when it comes to finances, financial reporting, and getting the books in order? Where do you see people go wrong?
So there's quite a few common mistakes, and they also can be broken down into simple bookkeeping. And then as a business grows, there's some more complex bookkeeping and accounting systems where there are common breakdowns. So some of the fundamentals that I see go wrong are not keeping business and personal transactions separate. So it's very important to have separate business bank accounts, credit card, merchant facilities for if you're receiving payments by credit card, and keeping all of that separate to personal. Using a cloud accounting system, so tools like Xero, QuickBooks Online, where the data from bank accounts is feeding into the software, this eliminates a lot of manual data entry and also would improve the accuracy of what's coming in because it's an automated feed. So definitely if you're not using cloud accounting software, go and have a look at it. As the business grows, there's different roles within the accounting team. And I see business owners try and be too hands-on with the bookkeeping. So I'm just going to describe how we do bookkeeping for one of the dentists that I work with and the way that we've been able to involve this particular practice receptionist in the process, have some controls to prevent errors, and then also how we've involved the practice owners who also happen to be dentists within the practice. So this particular receptionist didn't have bookkeeping experience before she started. So what we set up Xero for the practice, and then some components of bookkeeping are manual. They're just data entry. So they don't need someone with a bookkeeping background to enter it, but they do need someone who understands it to check it. So the receptionist within this practice enters all of the bills, so the supply bills for payment, into Xero. Then once a week, the practice owner who's in charge of payments goes through that list of bills, identifies which ones are due that week, and then approves them for payment. And then at the back end, we check to make sure that the GST is correct. So that whole process only takes about 15 minutes of the dentist's time. Whereas previously was the process was he had a whole list, a whole big thing of paper every week to go through to work out which bills were payable. So that task should be delegated to someone within, I believe, within the practice. And that could be done in the receptionist's downtime.
Cool. Okay. So what's been the impact of that on the practice? Has it freed up time? Has it given them greater understanding of their practice? What's been the outcome for them?
So a couple of benefits. So one is by entering the bills into the accounting software as they are received by the practice rather than as they are due. They have a clear list of what is outstanding at any point in time so they can plan their cash flow. The practice owner, it saved a lot of his time. So he's paying his suppliers on time and accurately, but it's not wasting his high-level time doing worrying about accounts payable. And it's also giving and adding another skill to the receptionist, so it's developing her skill set and making her feel that she's valued in the team because the practice invested in training her in how to use the accounting software.
Okay, cool. And so in terms of making sure your books are up to date, obviously we all know that having good sets of books is important for, obviously for compliance reasons, we get that. But from the point of view of making timely business decisions, where do you see having a solid bookkeeping process, I suppose workflow mapped out, where do you see that as being critical in running a business?
So it's really important to be reviewing financial statements within the business regularly. So I would say monthly. And ideally, you'd be doing that within the first or the second week after the end of each month so that the information that you're receiving is timely, which then means that you can make informed decisions. For example, if you're looking at a profit and loss statement and it might have, so say we've just done the December bookkeeping and you might have November and maybe three prior months, looking at those comparatives and looking at the overhead expenses, you'll quickly be able to see whether there's a spike in any of those expenses. And it makes it far easier to control costs because you're looking at that every month and keeping an eye on trends and whether the expenses are in line with what you are expecting.
Yeah. So again, I think that just to jump in on that, I think one of the key things I like to do in my practice and certainly when I work with people is to prepare a financial forecast. So there's what the year should be like ahead of time, what you're trying to do in terms of revenue per provider, what your expenses should be, based on some forecasting and whatnot, and then obviously measuring how your actual performance tracks against the forecast. Do you do a cash report as well, or do you stick mainly with the P&L?
So that's a cash flow reporting. So forecasting is not part of a service that we offer, but I think it's really important. So we encourage the businesses that we work with, they all have accountants too, and we encourage them to develop a cash flow forecast so that they are planning out at least a few months in advance what cash inflows they're expecting and what cash outflows they're expecting, because cash flow management and poor cash flow is one of the most common reasons that businesses fail. So it's really important to keep an eye on that and not just what's in the bank today, but what is expected to happen over the next few months.
Yeah. I think there's that great saying, isn't there? What is it? The revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, but cash is king. And
yes. So true.
I don't know who coined that phrase, but I really like it. It's something that I try and keep close to my heart as well. Look, there's some really solid gold information around keeping accurate books and so on. One of the things I'm also curious to ask when it comes to the finances of a business, because obviously we know where the common mistakes are, but if you had three tips that you were going to share for small businesses, but dentists in particular, three things that they really should focus on to get their kind of books up to speed or books in good shape, what would be the two or three things you reckon would be just good things to do now?
So using cloud accounting software, which I've mentioned, having a check between the practice figures and the accounting software. So when I've been working with the dentist, when I first started, there wasn't a check to make sure that what was the revenue figures through the practice actually matched what was coming through the bank account and recorded in the accounting software. So I see that as a key risk for dentists. Having a review process, so actually booking time in your calendar every month to review the reports, because if it's not booked in and there's not a timeline from the bookkeeper about for when the reports are supposed to be finalized, often that's one of those jobs that just gets pushed to the side and doesn't happen. So make sure it's actually booked in. And maybe you want to have that conversation if you have a business partner or with an accountant or another advisor, and that can be helpful too, especially if the reports don't make sense initially. Get some advice the first few times you're looking at the reports to make sure you understand what a balance sheet is, how to interpret a profit and loss, and what those figures mean.
I think that's really good advice. I think, you know, one of the things that I see a lot of professionals do, dentists included, but not just dentists, is they kind of get so busy doing their thing every day that they forget to look at the actual business performance, and it's almost cash management by bank account. You know, oh, I've got enough money in the bank, it should be okay. And, you know, when I first started in business, I used to do a bit of that too. But as I've learned more and grown more, I've realized the importance of having a solid financial system in place to help drive the business. And what you've outlined there, I think it's some really key steps. So thank you. I think that's really great advice. So for anyone listening there, I hope you've taken some great notes from Meryl there. I think she's just shared with you a really lovely, simple system for keeping your business on track financially.
I've thought of two more tips if we have time.
Go for it. We've got all the time you need. Go for it.
Okay. So another common mistake, there's a bank reconciliation is a process, and it is comparing the bank balance on a statement compared to the accounting software. And if they don't match, it means that there's missing or duplicate bank transactions in accounting software. And often that is not done, which means accounting software figures aren't correct. So that's a key step that is often neglected. So if you already have a bookkeeper, ask them if they are doing bank reconciliations. And I would ask them to include the bank reconciliations in your reporting pack that they send to you quarterly. You might not need to see it every month, but just something to make sure that it is happening.
Cool. Okay, that is fabulous. All right, so we've gone over a couple of things there that are really going to make a difference to getting the finance of the practice in place. And I want to just round out our conversation today with another question, going back to more broad, general business sort of conversations. If you were talking to your, I don't know how old you are, but I'm going to say if you were talking to your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give yourself now based on what you know?
So I would tell myself to have started trying to run a business earlier. So it was always my passion and goal to run my own business. And I had a tennis coaching business back when I was at uni. And then it took me almost 10 years to start my next business. I was following the corporate career path. And in hindsight, I would still have got that solid corporate experience, because I think that has been really beneficial. But in hindsight, I would tell my 20-year-old self to start a business on the side earlier to develop some of those business skills, because I had to learn in my 30s about having sales conversations with clients, how to do marketing. There was a whole lot of other business skills that I needed to develop, which I could have developed much earlier if I'd started a small business on the side when I was in my early 20s.
Fantastic. I think that's really good advice. I think, you know, developing some of those business skills are really critical. And yeah, interestingly enough, you know, for me, I started my first business when I was 17, and it had nothing to do with dentistry, of course. I was selling footy jerseys at school. And then I developed another business. And again, it was all about learning how to market and sell and do those things. And yeah, it was only then that I took those skills into dentistry. So I guess for anyone listening, your side business doesn't have to be a practice as well. It could be something completely different, just to, you know, put that out there. Meryl, one last question. You've got a dinner party coming up. Let's just say there's this hypothetical dinner party coming up, and you can invite a couple of people. Who would you like to have around the dinner table for conversation? Who would be the people you'd invite?
So Warren Buffett, I think he's a very smart guy, and would be. I'd have to have so many questions for him, so that would be interesting. Kelly Slater, I'm a surfer, huge surfing fan, and he's been around in the surfing world is dominated for so long. And again, I think he'd have so many interesting things to say. And probably Tim Ferriss, again, another interesting guy.
Nice. Well, I reckon there'd be some good conversations around that table.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Tim Ferriss would be able to straddle the financial and the surfing worlds quite elegantly too, just quietly. I think he's pretty cool dude. Meryl, thanks so much for taking the time to share this. You've been really generous in your time, but you've also been really generous in your knowledge. There's been some absolute value bombs dropped throughout our conversation. So I hope for the audience, if you've been listening there and taking notes, the key thing is to take those, you know, value bombs that Meryl shared with you and put them into practice and develop that into your own business. So Meryl, again, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate you coming onto the show, and I hope we can catch up again soon.
Thanks a lot for having me, Jesse.
Cheers. I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Meryl Johnston as much as I enjoyed it. As you can see, she's achieved phenomenal growth with her business, and the lessons that she shared with her journey are directly relevant to dental practices and their journey, because the journeys that a business goes through, the stages of growth, if you will, are predictable. And it's the same with dental practice. The stages of growth are entirely predictable, and the challenges that you face at every single step of the journey are predictable too. And equally, so are the remedies. So what I really loved that Meryl had to share was particularly around getting some great systems in place. She's actually had slower growth at the outset because she was working so hard to get those systems in place, growing her team so they could execute on those systems and freeing her up to do what she does best, which is obviously business development and the like. So when it comes to dental practice, we want to be thinking about those things as well, creating great systems so that the team can support the practice and execute on those systems and deliver great care to patients. And the shift from being a typical owner-operator style business, which is, you know, the traditional practice management paradigm, which I think is fundamentally flawed, where that shift goes from the dentist being the guy or girl who provides great care to patients, you know, the true business ownership model is really when the business owner helps develop great teams who support patients, who then support the business, and the business in turn supports the business owner or the dentist. So I wanted to share that with you because it's really, really important. You need to be getting these systems and teams in place. Now, on that note, I'm going to be running a workshop, which I normally don't open up to the general public. It's for my Practice Max coaching clients. We're running it in February at the Gold Coast, late February 23, 24, and we're going to be going through the stages of growth of a practice, and we're going to be specifically focusing on getting those systems in place and getting the team structure in place so that as you ascend through the stages of growth, going from, you know, survival through to stability and success and scaling and being able to star in your business, those are the key things we're going to be addressing, and we're dividing that workshop into three key phases. Firstly, is about getting to profitability, having a good foundation in place, and of course, that's, you know, the systems and the team that we spoke about. The second step is really building a business that is able to be scaled, and if you don't get those foundations right, then the scaling process is going to be a complete mess, and the scaling process is what gives you time freedom. It's where you can run a business that's a true business as opposed to being an owner-operator. And the third part of the workshop is building a practice that is valuable. What we talk about is building the practice to sell. Now, of course, you may never sell, but, you know, sometimes we need to account for life circumstances that might be around the corner. And ultimately, we take the view of making sure the practice is as valuable as possible at any given moment in time. So the workshop is called Profitable, Scalable, and Sellable. And we're going to be covering all of those foundations about, you know, systems, team, and then scaling from there. So I hope you can join us. We'll put a link in the show notes to it. But the URL to register is drjessegreen.com/nail it. Hope to see you there. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.